What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Ben Golver with the Washington Post. I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina, who writes about basketball for GQ and 538. Michael, we are taping this on a Thursday morning. We are basically into day three of the great 2020 election watch. Still no decision quite yet on who's going to be president of the United States, but I'm curious because you're a big 538 guy, and I know they're, you know, neck deep into this entire morass of polling data and, you know, ballots and all this different stuff. How have your last 3 days gone? Has it been an emotional roller coaster? Are you over there just trusting your own personal model about the election? I mean, what's up, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, I think, as well as anyone who wanted the election to go in one particular direction can be feeling right now. I mean, election night was terrible.
I saw some rage posting from you. I saw a couple of, I don't know if it was tweets or Instagrams. I just remember, you know, maybe thinking about a wellness check for Michael Pina.
Yeah, the election night was bad, but I had done a lot of reading leading up to election day, and so I was kind of prepared for the, quote, red mirage that was going to kind of hit the country where we hadn't counted the mail-in ballots and kind of the early voting ballots beforehand. So I knew that it was going to take a while and there would be a trickle. But at the same time, I also told myself that Trump was going to lose Florida at like 8 o'clock and then I could go to bed. So I was a little upset, even though I tried to prepare myself mentally.
Were you able to sleep? I mean, how'd that go?
I would say I slept probably better than Nate Silver did on election night.
People need to lay off the data, guys, man. I saw way too many hate tweets. And look, maybe people would say, yeah, you guys are data dorks too, so of course you'd stand up for your own. I mean, look, the polls were not precisely right, but polls are never precisely right. I think it really, you know, tweaked everyone's expectations really hard, especially on Tuesday night like you're describing. For me, I just hope that they can get a resolution here very quickly. I think it's better for the country if they can, call this thing as soon as it's, you know, accurate and hopefully everything's counted. And I just want to congratulate any of our listeners who went out and voted or helped at polling stations. I know I heard of from a bunch of different people who did that. Very, very cool. Congratulations on your activism. It is appreciated. And hopefully we'll be able to check back next week, Michael, and maybe we'll have a president. In other news, let's just talk about the NBA. Look, we're also waiting on a vote or at least a decision from the NBA players and the owners this week. I think we've actually run through the state of those conversations fairly well. I think at this point, the expectation is the players are going to go along with the December 22nd start date, which is sort of what we anticipated earlier this week. So I was hoping we could just have a more fun conversation today, a lighter conversation today, Michael. Dig into some trade talks, maybe some draft takes, just some general speculation about, you know, God knows what. Let's get your tinfoil hat on, you know, get yourself nice and prepared here for your big moment. And let's start with what I think was the news of yesterday coming from Shams Charania of The Athletic, that the New Orleans Pelicans are openly discussing Drew Holiday in trade talks. Now, he's been a guy who's kind of a fake trade or a trade machine mainstay, I would say, for years and years. He's a veteran point guard or two guard, depending on how you want to use him, who just fits in a lot of different situations, doesn't necessarily have to be a number one guy, can play off of a superstar if you've already got a superstar, is very popular among his fellow NBA players, great guy on and off the court. There's a lot to like there. He's had a pretty big salary for quite a while, and I think that has maybe made it more difficult for New Orleans to trade him potentially in the past, but at the same time, you know, you could definitely say from his leadership perspective and just a stability perspective in recent years, he's earned that number, even if it's maybe a little bit too rich for my preference in terms of what he's bringing to the table. First of all, do you view Drew Holiday as a pretty attractive trade piece? And which types of teams do you think should be interested in him before maybe we get into some specific fake trades?
I'm really glad that you started this conversation like that. Because the question I was going to ask you is Drew Holiday overrated at this point? And I like Drew Holiday. I totally can comprehend what he brings to the table. And I, you know, anyone who can defend like he does, anyone who is as positive a locker room presence as he is, anyone who can get buckets kind of on a whim and against anyone in one-on-one situations is really valuable. And he's got great vision and he's a pretty good shooter, not a great shooter, a pretty good shooter. But like, I feel like he's not necessarily the type, like, I don't consider him a star. Do you consider him a star? Because
not
he's made one All-Star team in his career.
Well, he would have made more if he was in the Eastern Conference. We know that for sure. I mean, it's just the bar is so much lower out there. Anybody can be an All-Star in the Eastern Conference. No, I don't quite consider him a star. I think he's really good. I wouldn't say great. On this issue of overrated, underrated, mm-hmm. I think still the casual basketball fan would underrate him. I think NBA Twitter would overrate him, so the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I would love there to be an international basketball rating system where we could all just, you know, assign a guy a number and then we could, you know once and for all, is that number overrating or underrating? Because so much of that conversation depends on who you're talking with, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that he is the type of player, theoretically, who fits with so many different types of teams, really has no red flags at this point because he's held up pretty well from an injury perspective after, you know, dealing with some issues earlier in his career. You're not going to get a lot of like hate from within the basketball community, and I think that he's better than a lot of teams' point guards, and he plays defense a lot better than a lot of teams' point guards. So when you're looking around the league and, you know, guys are trying to, you know, think, who should we target? I think he comes up on people's list frequently because he's got some skills that, you know, a lot of other guys lack, and that just, you know, leads his value maybe to be propped up online a little bit more. I do think, you know, in the interest of balance, the Pelicans sucked last year without Zion, you know, flat out. And they had some pretty good players. And, you know, Drew's out there on the court and they're sucking. So he's not a kind of player who's going to change your team and just like, you know, will you to a plus 500 record and carry you into the playoffs if he's got an average supporting cast. I mean, he had Brandon Ingram as an all-star. He had Lonzo. I mean, there was other pieces down there and they, you know, lost for an entire month straight practically, right? So I do think that there's a need to be a little bit careful in assigning value to him.
Yeah, that's I fall in line there, and I don't want to be too critical because I do like Drew Holiday. I just think he's propped up a little bit to a little loftier standards than he probably should be. And he's also 30 years old, which we should keep in mind going forward based on the contract and the fact that he's going to be or can become a free agent next summer if he wants to opt out of his current deal. But yeah, I mean, this is an interesting one. It's kind of an expected candidate, as you said, where the New Orleans Pelicans are potentially, I don't think they're going to be rebuilding per se, but they're young. They did not make the playoffs last year. They were one of the most disappointing teams in the bubble.
They're definitely in transition, and they got a new coach, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And they have all of these assets for the future. So they could go in a lot of different directions. And there's a lot of new people involved with the organization, Stan Van Gundy, David Griffin.
One thought I had on it, because if you'll remember back to the beginning of last year, David Griffin was really trying to make it that it was Drew Holiday's team, not Zion's team. In other words, he kind of wanted to launch Zion's career with kind of like training wheels on the bicycle, right? To make sure that there wasn't all that pressure on him. And I think that was pretty smart at the time. But now you've got Zion coming into year two, already showing he can have an all-star level impact when he's healthy and on the court and kind of used to it. And you're also going into a year where you can't have fans in your building, right? So, like, does the value of this, like, on-court leadership and composure and veteran savvy, is that as important for this team this year compared to last year if you're just playing in empty gyms and it's kind of like a pickup game? You know, I would question that. Like, I wonder if Drew Holiday just meant a lot more to the Pelicans last year than he theoretically would mean to them this upcoming year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think that
into the ravenous Utah Jazz arena where we're all, and everyone's good, all the fans are going to be screaming at us. Oh wait, you can hear a pin drop in the 300 level because there's nobody here. You know, it's like we don't need Drew to calm us down in that situation. You know,
for sure, you don't need that element of leadership, but you do need, I think, on a team where some of the younger players are the better players. You do need, I mean, there are egos still. There is a locker room hierarchy And having an experienced voice and a tempered voice like Jrue Holiday in the Pelicans locker room as they go through this transition period is valuable, regardless of, you know, not going into
It's a great point. Look, I mean, he's going to be valued if he stays there. I just think maybe he's a little bit more expendable. I think in previous years, they almost viewed him as an untouchable piece, right? Like, it's weird, the internal perception of who he was compared to the external perception, where everyone else is thinking like, oh, this is like a number three guy to put together on our team. And in New Orleans, it was always like, he's our rock, he's our foundation. Even when Anthony Davis was there, I think some people considered Jrue Holiday to kind of be like the leadership voice or the stable veteran. And so I think maybe that dynamic has just changed. I think it also helps you've got Stan Van Gundy. He's going to be a really darn loud voice in that locker room, right? I think it's going to be a different presence than Alvin. Now, would he prefer to have some veterans that he can, you know, speak to? I'm sure he seems to be very pro JJ Redick and, you know, a few other guys. But again, are you as reliant upon your team for that stuff this year compared to last year? Who knows? And I also think like Zion's getting to the point where if he's ready or not, that's your team, right? From a leadership standpoint, when you're that good, you're that hyped, everybody's asking about you everywhere you go. I think that transition's also well underway. So what type of teams, though, Michael, do you think would be interested in Jrue? Are we talking about contenders looking for an extra piece? Are we talking about, you know, dilapidated franchises that need somebody to give them a level of respect? Are we looking at something in between, you know, a second-tier team trying to boost up a little bit? Who do you think makes the most sense? What types of teams?
Yeah, right before I answer that question, I want to make one more point about Jrue, if I may. I feel like he is in this interesting, like the perception of him is very interesting in that he had this terrific playoff series against the Portland Trailblazers a couple years ago where they sweep Portland and he's basically smothering Dame Lillard. And if you just look at all the success Dame has had since that series and how amazing he is, like that defensive job, I think just sticks in the minds of people. So I just want to point out how powerful the playoffs are in our imagination. And
Sure. Well, that goes back to don't judge a player on his best day or his worst day, right? That was his best series by far. So you give him complete credit for it. But what did he do in the playoffs this year, right? What did he do in the playoffs once Anthony Davis shut down for that season, right? They're not even there. So you have to take into account those data points as well. And that happens a lot, by the way, for guys in small markets, right? Where their best moments do get highlighted by the national audience because people are actually tuning in. The day-to-day for a lot of the years in New Orleans with Jrue Holiday, it's not his fault, but just like the day-to-day reality of that franchise has been a real slog. It's been a lot of losses. It's been a lot of head-scratching. Why aren't we better than we are? How come our defense is hopeless if we've got one of the best on-ball defenders in the game? And again, it's not necessarily his fault, but he hasn't been that transformative presence that would lead you to call him a star, as you kind of opened with asking that question.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, to answer your initial question here, when I think about Jrue Holiday and trade partners, like, I'm not really that interested in him unless I can win the championship next season.
Wow.
Is that, do you think that's going too far? Because I do think there's a lot of teams that are going to think that they can win the championship next season, particularly if they add a Jrue Holiday who kind of fills a hole for them. You know, a team that is already very good, but you add someone with his defensive chops. You know, he probably should have been on the all-defensive team this year. And just his ability to score, as we discussed his game earlier, like his skill set is really good when it's the third option on a good team, I think. So those are the types of teams that I was looking at. Do you think, like, I mean, obviously, if you're rebuilding, you're not going after Jrue Holiday, given his age and his contract situation and the fact that he's a flight risk potentially. But like if you're in the middle tier or you're a team that is trying to even like not maybe not rebuilding in their eyes, but like trying to get better, trying to make a playoff push, like a team like Atlanta, which I tried to formulate, I tried to find like a fake trade with Atlanta because I think Atlanta will be very aggressive. I just can't get there with teams like that. Do you disagree or do you agree with that?
Well, I think if I'm using like a liberal definition of going for a title, I kind of agree with you. I feel like the teams that make the most sense, you know, a lot of people would compare Jrue Holiday to Mike Conley in terms of both being like just slightly off the all-star radar, you know, both being solid two-way, really good, you know, veteran leaders for their teams, et cetera. So I could envision a team doing similar to what Utah did, which is cash in a couple assets, bring in Mike Conley, and hope that he's the final piece to a really well-balanced starting five that can kind of push you into a deeper playoff run. Now, it didn't work out for Utah like that last year, but at least that was the concept. And part of the problem was Conley fell off a cliff a little bit during last season and wasn't who you necessarily wanted him to be. But that was the concept behind that trade, and I really liked that trade idea and planning from Utah at the time. So I could see teams that are in a similar spot to them where, okay, you're not actually a tier one title contender. Maybe you're in that second tier. Maybe you're actually in the top of that third tier, but you're hoping, this is your window. You've got some other pieces who are carrying the heavy weight, and Holiday is the guy to kind of push you over the top. So does that fit? Because I asked you to come up with your favorite fake trades. Does my description fit with some of the teams that you've got on your list or no?
Yeah, all of them.
Look at that, Michael. Perfectly in sync. We're just two figure skaters out here spinning each other in the air.
Yes, exactly. Either better than the tier that potentially better than the tier that you just described, or like knocking on the door of a team like Utah, which I mean, I thought Utah was a title contender last season before the year actually began.
Yeah, well, you 538 guys always do. No, I'm just kidding. Look, fully healthy, they looked really, really, really good on paper last year. I thought they were going to be a higher seed than they wound up being. And the Conley part is just a huge question heading into next season. Like, which version do we get, they probably deserve to be on the outskirts of that conversation right now. But I agree with you. It should be a pretty wide open race just because you've got a few teams that are going to be pacing themselves and all these weird variables that are throwing things off. So give me your number one fake trade. It doesn't have to be your favorite one, but if it is, all the better.
So my first one is with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Homecoming. A homecoming. Yep.
And it's a very simple trade. The type of player for player swap that you just basically never see. And if this deal were to actually happen, I doubt it would be player for player, even though the player for player machination actually does work. But what I'm thinking is Jrue Holiday for Tobias Harris. Straight up swap.
Wow.
And my argument here for New Orleans is you get slightly younger, you get you're not really losing any character. Tobias Harris is a really high character player. He has a good relationship already with Stan Van Gundy, which is kind of what attracted me the most to this proposition. And then
Were they in Detroit together?
They were in Detroit together. Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Also, I believe
in Orlando together too, or no?
I think so. Let me look this. I know they've.
Is Stan Van Gundy his uncle, Michael? I mean, how long do these guys go back?
So they were together in Detroit. They were not together in Orlando. But you make this deal, and you have Tobias Harris. What I like is that, again, like, he's a little bit younger. He's 28 years old, but also he's locked in under contract for the next few years. And I think that having stability when you're a team as young as the New Orleans Pelicans are will be valuable. So as opposed to Jrue Holiday, who can enter free agency, as we already mentioned, Tobias is just kind of a guy who's going to be there and you can depend on. And he's just a really solid basketball player. And I think that the fit could be fine with Zion and Brandon Ingram. And you could have a really intriguing front court there with a lot of different possibilities.
Give me Philly's side. Why is Philly interested in Jrue Holiday?
Well, Philly just needs ball handlers, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, somebody needs to dribble, right?
Yeah, they need ball handlers. This is just like a 3.0 version of Josh Richardson. Like, it's just so much better in every single possible way. And whenever I look at the Philadelphia 76ers, I think that Tobias Harris has a slight overlap positionally with Ben Simmons. And I don't know how Doc Rivers is going to work this out. And, Brett Brown wanted to play Ben Simmons at the four heading into the bubble, as we know. We didn't really get to see that because of injuries. But, like, a Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid front court with three guards just three players who can all dribble, pass, and shoot really well, I think that is their recipe for success at the end of the day. So I like Drew, just I like his fit a little bit more. I like his playmaking ability. Him running pick and roll with Embiid could get really interesting. He's not like a super duper spot up 3-point shooter. But you just have to respect Drew Holiday. When you can't just like leave Drew Holiday wide open. He's too smart, cutting and all of that. So that's why, I mean, I just think it's a really clean trade. What are your thoughts?
Well, Michael, usually I kind of poo-poo your ideas, don't I? I mean, a lot of the time I'm maybe more negative than usual on a lot of your trade ideas. I like this one a lot. I'll say this. First of all, if I was Philly, I would do it. If I was New Orleans, I would want sweeteners. I would want a pick, or I'd want something else good to go along with it, because I think I would just try to say, look, like the value of Drew's skills relative to the average player at his position is higher than the value of Tobias's Harris's skills to the rest of his position, right? You know, I just think that, you know, with Harris, I think that a lot of what he's does is just empty calories, right? I mean, he can space the court. I don't think he's a great defensive player. I don't think he's a great playmaker for his teammates. I don't think he makes other people better. He's out there, right? He's out there. So to me, I would want a little bit more in return, just whether it's picks or whatever, but I would definitely be open to the concept. Now, from Philly's perspective, I would definitely do it. It addresses their biggest weakness. I think Harris has got to be considered expendable. I think that you can't, it also flattens out your salary distribution, right? So you're not spending so much money on the 3, 4, 5 positions between Harris, Simmons, Embiid, and Horford. So that's helpful. And then it also potentially saves some other additional assets that you could attach to Horford and try to get rid of him. So it starts to unclog the picture to me, even if you're not actually saving that much money, because Holiday's got a really big salary himself. I just think it puts their books into a better overall spot. So, so far, so good. I mean, would you view Philly as a title contender if they made this trade alone?
Yeah, I would. I think it's a massive upgrade because I still think that they would need to move Horford. I think the Horford thing is just
still... They have to trade Horford, but their defense would be nice, man. And like, look, they were underperforming last year. They should have been better than they were. But if you've got Simmons, Holiday, and Embiid as your three core defensive pieces, and
that's an all-defensive team.
Yeah, right there. Right there. Yeah, and Richardson's good too, right? And so if you just find a better fitting piece, a more versatile piece than Horford, you're absolutely set there. You're in a great spot. I think my bigger question, just from a... I guess, you know, New Orleans' side would be, is there enough room for Harris and Ingram? Do those guys start to clash a little bit? And then you already have this idea of, you know, Zion versus Ingram. Whose team is it? How does the pecking order work? Can they work together? And you're dropping in another player in Harris who needs, you know, at least some shots. And if he doesn't get shots, then he's giving you absolutely nothing. I just worry, like, if Ingram was a better playmaker for his teammates, I know he's tried to make some progress there, but I just still don't really see that as being, like, a natural skill set for him. I would feel a little bit better about it. But I would worry that, you know, perhaps that's a little bit, you know, too much duplication in skills. But when you trade for Tobias Harris, you're not trading for him forever. This guy gets moved every 18 months. So, you know, it's also, like, that can be a short-term solution where if you're able to pick up some draft picks along the way from Philly, you're feeling good about it.
Yeah, and for the record, I had in my outline here, I wrote in parentheses that New Orleans should ask for a draft pick as well. So we're just like linked up right now on the exact same page.
I'm saying figure skating
across
man.
The board.
Olympics, we're coming. Winter Olympics, we're coming. All right, give me your fake trade number two. If it's as good as fake trade number one, Michael, we're going to have to alert the authorities and see if we can get you in charge of some of these moves.
So for the second one, you know, I'm stealing a little bit from a previous episode and a fake trade that we created for a different player. But I just, the similarities were too good to pass up. And I actually like this one a lot more. And I'm way more excited about this one than I was that other one. And what I'm talking about is Drew Holiday to the Milwaukee Bucks for Eric Bledsoe,
yes.
Dante DiVincenzo.
Milwaukee says yes. Don't even give me the details. You're saying we get rid of Eric Bledsoe? Do it.
This one is like, I think that the easy rebuttal is, why would New Orleans do this? And that's
sorry.
A really good question.
I started screaming there for a second. Can you give us the exact package again? It's Eric Bledsoe and Dante DiVincenzo.
and the 24th pick in this year's draft. And, you know, if you're New Orleans, you get a draft pick, a first-round draft pick. That's fun, I guess. You get a young player who has playoff experience, who can play multiple positions and do a lot of intriguing things. And then, honestly, like, Eric Bledsoe on a championship contender is not good. Eric Bledsoe on a team like New Orleans is, like, I think he's a physical talent, again, going back to what he used to be. And I think that even though he's, I think he's older than 30 now, he's still an effective player at his position, and I would say probably league average at his position. So, like, him sharing a backcourt with Lonzo Ball, I mean, that's arguably right there one of the better defensive backcourts in basketball, and you can just do a lot of really interesting things. So I think it's a pretty intriguing one for both.
I hear what you're saying. You're not going to talk me into a Lonzo Bledsoe backcourt. I mean, that's that's a bridge too far, okay? Well, here, can I weigh in briefly?
Yeah.
I think Milwaukee, like I'm, you know, jokingly saying, they say yes, right? If they can make this trade without parting with who I would view their core guys as Giannis, Middleton, I would throw Lopez in there. Like, if they can do it with just the other scraps of their roster, they would do it. I think the problem here is that Bledsoe's contract is pretty darn bad, right? And I think you probably have to give even more if you're Milwaukee to compensate for that. Would you agree, or am I being too harsh?
No, I think if they were actually negotiating, that's exactly what would happen. I think that, you know, New Orleans would ask for more future picks probably, and it would be tough to just turn that down. Especially, I mean, if you're Milwaukee, what this does is just make you the championship favorite, right? Do you disagree? I mean, a Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, big three.
I'm licking my lips. People can hear it on the other side. As soon as you mentioned Milwaukee, I just started screaming yes, 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 and blacked out. No, look, it would be a very, very helpful for Giannis, and it would make their defense awesome, just like we talked about in the Philly example. And it would really help on offense. It would really help them in late game situations because, you know, Bledsoe just throws a ball out of bounds every time he comes down the court, and he flings his body towards the rim and falls down on the ground. And, like, that's actually not how you play great winning playoff basketball. So, yeah, I think Milwaukee's all in. You know, for New Orleans, I'm being a little bit, you know, facetious and joking, you know, when you're trying to talk up their young backcourt. Again, I think if you're making this trade, though, isn't that just a transition? I mean, you have to look at Bledsoe and say he's not a long-term solution, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you do this trade because you get DiVincenzo, you get that pick, and maybe another pick, another future pick that you can then have in your cache of assets. But, like, my point about Bledsoe is just, like, he's not – I just don't think that – I think a lot of his struggles were contextual – and that facing, you know, he's talked about this before, like the anxiety of playing high pressure games. There won't be a lot of high stress games playing in New Orleans throughout the rest of this contract that he has. And so, like, that's where I'm coming from there. And I don't think that the drop in this context where the stakes are lower is that significant for New Orleans going from Holiday to Eric Bledsoe.
For sure. If you could pick up extra additional assets to offset that little drop in expectations, I think you're interested. Okay, mm-hmm. What is your third trade, fake trade?
So my third trade is with the Golden State Warriors.
Wow.
And this is probably my favorite one just because I want the Golden State Warriors to be like a team with a vengeance season from them. I think that
you
would
want them
be
resurrected,
so entertaining.
Coming out of the graveyard as ghosts to haunt everybody. That's what you want.
I realize that after 5 years of really loathing their existence as a basketball fan, and I was able to appreciate how great they were and everything. I just didn't like or enjoy the dominance. I realized that I think I missed them in the bubble. Like I had these like withdrawals where I was just like, I really wish I could watch Steph Curry and Klay Thompson play basketball right now. They're just so it's a lot of joy. It's a lot of entertainment. It's a thrill. I like the way they play.
So good. Even the haters love them, Michael. So good. Even the haters love them. I'm with you. Look, who doesn't like to watch Steph Curry play, especially if he's got some pieces around him? So What's your idea here? How are you getting Holiday onto the Warriors? Please don't tell me it's an Andrew Wiggins trade, because the Pelicans already have Andrew Wiggins and Brandon Ingram, although he's a slightly better
version. Oh, jeez. Come on. Oh, my. I can't let that one slide.
Look, that's a tease. Remember, people used to compare those two guys year after year after year, and Ingram has taken off for sure. Wiggins has flatlined. But that now starts to sound like way too many duplicated skills if you're going to trade Wiggins back to New Orleans.
Okay, so the trade is Jrue Holiday for Andrew Wiggins and
14 draft picks. What are we doing?
Well, just one that I have here, and it's Minnesota's top three protected pick in 2021.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't do that. Can we do number two this year instead?
Well, do you think I'm looking at it from New Orleans' perspective, honestly, because I gotta swallow Andrew Wiggins' contract right now. So I want a very juicy asset, and I just think that this works great for both sides, because I put Jrue Holiday on the Golden State Warriors, and like, it's just perfection. Like I said earlier at the top, like, I don't think he can be a second option on a championship contender. He's better served as a third. Here he would be like fourth in terms of touches, maybe. Or I mean, Klay Thompson doesn't touch the ball a ton; he just shoots it a ton. But the running Steph off screens, playing Steph and Klay off the ball, having Jrue Holiday kind of orchestrate offense, letting Draymond do his thing on transition and everything. Like, I just think like Golden State's offense would be absolutely incredible.
So you're almost envisioning Jrue kind of like in the younger, shorter Andre Iguodala mode, maybe, or like a Sean Livingston type mode where you've got the high IQ, you're not asking them to do a ton, but he's going to make good decisions, and he lets, you know, Steph and Klay just go absolutely crazy. So you're lining up Steph, Jrue, Klay at the three, Draymond. That's a pretty nice team, you know, and those guys are all right in line from an age perspective. I think that Jrue would cherish the opportunity to play on a team with like championship aspirations. They'd probably be right there in that mix. If you're Golden State, I mean, you mentioned that is an absolutely attractive, incredible asset that they would be giving up the following year. Would you be willing to give up that pick, which we know is going to be pretty high because the Timberwolves are just kind of stuck, you know, in the bottom of the Western Conference, seemingly without too much upward mobility potential? Would you be willing to give that up for a guy who isn't technically a star? Are you saying the fit is so good that you would be willing to cash in now?
I mean, that's the nature of all of this, like the risk right there, right? Like, if you wait too long, maybe you don't get a player as good as Jrue who hits the market that lets you spend this asset in a trade, right? So, like, you could roll the dice and hold on to that asset and then trade it later. But I mean, the fact that it's top three protected in 2021 means, as you said, Minnesota is terrible. So with everybody else trying to win basketball games in the short term, like, that could roll over to 2022 when it's unprotected. And by then, you know, Draymond's older, Klay's older, Steph's older. We don't know what they're going to look like in the future, in a couple of years. So, like, I just think there needs to be a little bit of a sense of urgency here. Not like this isn't a panic move at all by any means. And, you know, you still have the second overall pick in this year's draft to kind of have a bridge talent if you want to spend it on someone like James Wiseman or something like that. So I don't know. I think that it's potentially an overpay, just like that's actually definitely an overpay if we're kind of weighing these assets just in a vacuum. But for the context of Golden State, where they're at as an organization, all they've accomplished, what their ceiling is going forward, if you add someone like Holiday to the equation, I just think it makes a lot of sense for them.
Yeah, man, you brought your A+ work. I can see where you're going on that. If I was New Orleans, I would be very tempted by that pick. I would also, you know, they do face kind of a question here, though, is do they want to be younger than Zion, right? Like, this idea that, okay, you know, when you have a player like that on the clock, right? And they went through this with the Anthony Davis situation, too. Like, you're pretty confident you're going to have Zion for 8 years, right? I mean, that's pretty much what you can expect. Year one's already gone. Year two is coming up. You don't want him three quarters of the way through his rookie deal or nearing the end of his rookie deal when you're getting the best possible value from him before you have to pay him the big extension. and, you know, still be selling him this idea of like, oh yeah, well, we're bringing in this hotshot guy who went one and done in college, and he's going to be your new superstar, you know, tandem. That could get tricky. Like, I do feel like New Orleans, as much as they're going to want to try to preach like slow, gradual, organic building effort, I do think when you're a small market team like that and you have a star as big as Zion, who, imagine if he went to the Lakers, imagine if he went to, you know, any of these glamour franchises, what kind of a huge international icon he would be, you feel a level of pressure to not get too young, to not take it too slow, to make sure you can get him into a winning organization and situation right now. Mm-hmm. So I think from that standpoint, the ideas that you had in the first couple of trades where you're at least giving him some veteran pieces to work with and making sure that they can take a step forward and possibly like hopping into the playoff chase this year, I think that would be a really big symbolic victory for them, and they would really cherish that. So those kinds of trades I think make sense, even if I think from an asset standpoint, that pick you included from Golden State's probably the best single piece of any of these trades that you came up with. So New Orleans, it just like frames this debate for them, right? How fast do they want to be good? And they should have these kinds of options on the table for them, and it'll be really fascinating to see how they view their timeline if they do make one of these deals.
Well, I mean, that gets to the question of why are you trading Jrue Holiday in the first place, right? Like, having someone who's as good as he is, I understand the economic urgency and his contract situation and everything, and this is probably where we're going to get the most value for him, because you're not going to re-sign him to his next deal most likely. But I totally hear what you're saying, where you do not want Zion Williamson's experience in New Orleans to replicate what Anthony Davis went through, where you're bad every year. So just don't sign Tyreek Evans, I guess, is the message that New Orleans brass should take.
I think they're going to be able to avoid that one here going forward. Michael, I want to get some quick hitting trade ideas from you as well. We've talked in circles here all about different options for Jrue Holiday. He's kind of the name of the day. If we're looking forward here to the next month when free agency starts to open and, you know, some moves start to be made, give me your top three players that you want to see traded. Now, this doesn't mean they're going to be traded. This doesn't mean that you've got fake trades concocted. Just guys who are in situations that you wish were different, and that maybe if you think that if they were traded, it would be better for the league, it would be better for us as analysts, it would be better for our listeners as fans, it would just make things more interesting or just maybe more harmonious. Do you have three names in mind?
I do have three names in mind. I'm so glad you asked, Ben. My first name is someone who's just like he's one of those players who I think I like more than just about everybody else. And multiple time All-Star, extremely productive. He's probably / definitely over the hill in terms of what he was doing when he was in his prime, but still a very good player. And that is LaMarcus Aldridge.
Ooh, good one.
I really just don't see anything relevant going on in San Antonio, and I know we're going to probably talk about them later in this episode. Their situation is pretty bleak right now, and he's not good enough at this point in his career to carry a team to the playoffs. As intriguing as DeJounte Murray is, DeJounte Murray, who I adored heading into last season, Derek White, all of the great play that he displayed in the bubble. They have some other young pieces. DeMar DeRozan's probably going to opt into his player option. But I just don't think that San Antonio is going to make the playoffs next year. So I would just like to see LaMarcus like elsewhere, because I still think that he's really good. And I think he could help. I don't know in what role or specifically what team. Or even if he's like, do you think he's still good enough to be like the third best option on a championship contender? I think maybe, but I just would like to see him have that opportunity somewhere else.
Yeah, he could be the third if LeBron and AD are the top two. I hear what you're saying. Can I ask you, did you find San Antonio without him in the bubble to be a more entertaining team than they were with him?
I think
that has to factor into it too, right? I mean, they were very tied to playing his way and working around his skills, and he's still very effective, but as you're mentioning, not quite good enough to get a team over the hump. And it was sort of an addition by subtraction situation, I thought, where everybody else looked loose. The ball moved a lot better. They had way better spacing, way better pace. They looked more modern. The players looked like they were having a good time enjoying each other's mm-hmm. company and all that stuff. And I think all that matters if you're trying to kind of visualize what does the next era of the Spurs look like. It definitely doesn't include Aldridge. And to me, it doesn't include DeRozan either. So I second your nomination here on Aldridge being on the trade block and that being a wise move for San Antonio. Who else do you have on your list?
My next guy is a former LaMarcus Aldridge teammate, going back to his time with the Portland Trail Blazers. It is CJ McCollum.
Wow.
CJ, you know, like, I guess I'm just sick of I think CJ is tremendous. I like what he brings to the table. I like his game offensively. He's one of the better shot creators in the world. My thing is like, how many times are we going to go through it and roll the ball out with Dame and CJ as a backcourt? And I think they're both tremendous. I just think it's really difficult to win four straight playoff series or three straight playoff series in the Western Conference with such issues on the defensive end. Like it's not that he's wasted there because he's the second option on a team that basically always makes the playoffs or is really competitive. I just want to see him elsewhere.
It's tricky because it goes back to like, what's the goals of your organization, right? If your organization's in a small market, you know, you have a superstar level guy in Damian Lillard who you're playing the supermax money to. CJ and him get along well. They're effective. It's a winning formula. Mm-hmm. You're making the playoffs. The fan base is happy. You're selling tickets. You have a lot more reason to just kind of keep running it back as long as you possibly can until it's proven that it's completely broken. Then I think from outside perspective, we would say, come on, this team's never going to win a title. So like swing for the fences, try to do something bigger. So I think there's a gap there between internal goals and maybe external goals for, what a team mm-hmm. could look like without him traded. I think, you know, to a certain degree, I question whether he falls into a similar camp with Drew Holiday, where if you did trade him,
it's like the inverse, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in terms of skill set, but I guess what I meant is like not quite a star. And then if you traded him, are you getting a little bit less back than you would hope for, right? Like just, you know, some of those trade packages you were coming up with, like Tobias Harris, right? Or, Eric Bledsoe trade. Like if that was the deal for CJ McCollum that Portland was getting back, we would say that team's not going anywhere in the playoffs. Like, you know, you throw Tobias. They already have Tobias Harris. His name is Carmelo Anthony. He's 7 years older, you know? I guess I would just be I would be hesitant, and I would probably drive a hard bargain if I was Portland to trade CJ, and that would, you know, resign me to a fate where, you know, you're probably going out in the first round just like every year. But I would also not want to take the benefits of him being there for granted in pursuit of a title that, you know, may not, really be possible. I mean, ultimately, like, I think they're limited by their front court. If Nurkic can come back and be 100% healthy, consistent, and a monster, and Zach Collins can actually stay healthy and be really good, that team actually has some ceiling, right? If not, then all of this is kind of hot air. But would you like to see CJ have his own team? Are you in that camp, or do you just want to see shake it up?
No, he's not on that level to have his own team. I just think there's a lot of squads, particularly in the Eastern Conference, who could use his ability to just rise up from anywhere, be at the mid-range, be it behind the three-point line, and just hit a shot like in crunch time in the fourth quarter.
Well, that's another great comparison point for Drew Holiday. He'd be an Eastern Conference All-Star. If you throw CJ McCollum in the East, 100%, he's an All-Star. There's no question. All right, give me your last guy you want traded.
So this is not a star, and I actually have a fake trade that is, I don't think, very realistic, but the spirit of it is really intriguing to me.
Sounding like Phil Jackson over here, okay.
I'm the Zen master today. The player in question is PJ Tucker, and I guess I'm saying that because I have all but given up.
I would love to see PJ Tucker traded. That guy deserves a new home, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's different in Houston. now, and you know, Harden is still there, and that's there's still some of the same personnel right now, I suppose. But the guy who went there a couple years ago to win a title, like that, just it's just a different situation now, and his role is different, his value is different to them. So I just would like to see PJ elsewhere, and the team and the so I have another one for one swap that I think is really fascinating, and I don't think it will ever happen. But what do you think about PJ Tucker to the Atlanta Hawks for DeAndre Hunter?
I think that would be just a great Tillman Fertitta move to just completely demoralize and depress the fan base. They'd all be like, who? We were supposed to make a statue of PJ Tucker, and now you're giving us this guy we've never heard of? I think you got to do better for PJ Tucker. I know that might be a blog boy take for me, but that guy is really, really valuable. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm sold yet on DeAndre Hunter. I guess make the case for him.
Well, so what I'm thinking here is basically just if you're Atlanta, you're a team that is completely – like I tried to concoct a – as I said earlier, I tried to concoct a fake Jrue Holiday trade with Atlanta because I think Atlanta is going to be really aggressive and try to get better in the short term. They really want to make the playoffs. Trae Young started in the All-Star game. He's really good. So adding a piece like PJ Tucker is just you add immediate credibility. You add someone who veteran presence, has played in humongous games against really great competition. I think his influence would rub off on everybody else who's still there, who's young, most notably someone like John Collins. And he's a guy who doesn't need the ball. He's a guy who stands in the corner and shoots threes. That's what he's excelled at the past couple of years with James Harden, doing basically everything on offense. And then defensively, he's just like, again, he's a culture tone setter. So I just think he would do a lot for your team in the short term to kind of propel you forward. And I think Atlanta should have their sights on the playoffs next season as bad as they were this year. And like
strong argument, I don't like it for PJ Tucker. I want him on a contender. I want him finally getting look, let's get him on to a team that's like an A-list group. Let's completely ring chase. Let's have all those days of him digging out the post defense and standing in the corner and watching Harden, never getting injured, night after night after night doing the dirty work. Let's have that all pay off.
If I could like just magically wave a wand and put him on a team, that team would be the Los Angeles Clippers, like, to be clear.
Wow.
But, well, yeah, I mean, it would be amazing. Like, that's the exact type of person that the Clippers, I think, need next season.
You know who should trade for him is your guys.
Well, they already have Marcus Smart, so you can't have too much of that.
PJ at the five, Marcus Smart at the four. That's a squad.
No, it is right. I think that you're kind of you talked earlier about kind of duplicating skill sets. If you already have Grant Williams, it's like there's only so many minutes for guys like that. But
don't insult PJ Tucker by mentioning Grant Williams in the same sentence as him, Michael. Come on, can I give you my top three here quickly?
I would love to hear it.
Well, you came up with very nuanced and interesting picks from different, you know, classes of players, you know, superstars, number two guys, and so forth, and different places around the league. I scoured the list of players, and I came back to three usual suspects, and they've all been linked together. And the more I think about it, the more I want to see all of them in different spots next year. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Chris Paul, James Harden, Russell Westbrook. All three need to be traded. I'm serious. Like, I think when I look at the Chris Paul situation, I mean, there's been kind of talk, what is Oklahoma City trying to do? They still haven't even hired the coach, right? It's just a weird situation. There's been rumors, oh, does Chris Paul want to be in LA? Does he want to be in New York? I think actually for your personal benefit, Michael, I want to see Chris Paul traded to the Knicks. I want him to go through that old man veteran wisdom season with a whole bunch of young guys. He teaches RJ Barrett about life, buys him a bunch of nice suits, and acts as the mentor and all that stuff. And I want that storyline for you so you can document it and have something, you know, positive going on in your life here during the pandemic. I can just see you kind of butting up to Chris Paul after every single game and, you know, maybe, you know, getting some, you know, details about the future labor negotiations and all that. So I want that one for you. And I also think, personally, I'd like to see Shea run his own team in OKC. Why not? Take the training wheels off. See what happens. There's going to be some, you know, some stumbles, but let's do it. Let's just let's see what this guy's potential really is. And hopefully you can get a lot back if you're OKC. And I just love it whenever Sam Presti trades a star because he always winds up just making it look ridiculously good 3 years later.
So you said that, you know, you poo-pooed slightly my P.J. Tucker proposal because you want P.J. Tucker to win a championship and be in that situation. That's how I feel about Chris Paul. I don't want to see Chris Paul on the Knicks. That's terrible.
He already has his championship. It was the last contract he signed, okay?
Like, Jesus.
That thing was gigantic. It's a little harder to trade him to a contender given the size of that contract. That's the only reason why I'm saying the Knicks. I mean, you could trade them other places. I personally, that was my gift to you, okay? Now, in terms of Harden and Westbrook, we don't need to belabor this point, but I just worry that, you know, sometimes the musicians hang on a little bit too long, right? And then they start doing the clubs in Vegas, and then they start doing the casinos in the California desert, right? And then in just kind of the lower, it just keeps kind of dropping and dropping in quality, and eventually it's just sad, and no one's going to their shows. I just worry that's what's going to happen with Harden. If he doesn't have his coach, doesn't have his GM, doesn't have the supporting cast right, they do have to trade Tucker potentially. Like, I think it could get dark. I just don't want to see it. I want him to get out in front of that and just remold and do it somewhere else. So that's why I want him traded. With Westbrook, I just think it would be funny if Tillman traded both of his stars after complaining about their salaries to President Trump. I just think that would be just an amazing way for the Rockets season to come full circle. Not a lot of other analysis beyond that. Although, it would almost be incredible if they traded Harden but not Westbrook, and like Rockets fans just had to live like the Westbrook experience and that's all they had. Oof. I mean, that would really... I mean, look, even if fans were allowed in the building, right? How many tickets are they selling to that? Who knows? I'm not necessarily like rooting for the implosion of the Rockets, but I just do think it's better for everybody if they can find a way to get in front of this thing. So those are the three guys I want to see traded. Not necessarily the most original opinions from me, because those, I think we've talked about them quite a bit, but I'm just fixated on them, man. Like, I'm just dreading that Houston Rockets experience going into the next season.
Man, I mean, the more I think about Russell Westbrook's situation and I can't even really fathom like a spot for him. Like, maybe like Orlando, him in Orlando being the point guard, doing what, like filling the role that Markelle Fultz had last season. Like, I just, man, Westbrook is really bleak. Just, you know, obviously, I think he's better than the player that we saw in that Lakers series for a variety of reasons. I don't think that necessarily he'll ever be the guy who we saw before the season shut down when he looked like a borderline MVP candidate. I think that those days are just behind him. I could be wrong, but I do think
narrator,
the days of him.
You were not wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think that I just have no idea what role is right for him. And this, we haven't even talked money yet, or at least I haven't even brought it up. And his contract is just, it is an albatross. So that's a bleak one. Wait, can I ask you a quick question? Just kind of, you know, tangentially related to James Harden / very much related and connected to him.
I would love it if you asked me a question, Michael, please.
What was your reaction when you first saw that the Philadelphia 76ers were reportedly interested in acquiring James Harden?
I mean, you know, silent fist pump for sure. you know, it feels too good to be true. I told you that the first love of Daryl Morey's life is James Harden, you know, and questionably, you know, in contention with his family. But, you know, I think it's pretty close there. the interest factor there would not surprise me at all. I wonder, would Tillman's pride get in the way, you know? Even if Daryl's given him the best possible deal, can he do it?
That's tough, why it'll never happen.
Yeah, that's a tough hang-up. There's no question. So we'll have to We'll have to see it play out. But it does seem, you know, to put all these speculation aside, it seems like Houston's pretty committed to Harden at least for the next year, from what, you know, I've been hearing and reading various places. So, you know, I may not get my wish, but we shall see. All right, Michael, I want to close this episode out with one more question quickly. It comes in from Michael in Tasmania. He writes, "The draft is almost upon us, and it got me thinking. What pressure do you think front offices will be under to nail the draft? Will fans be more understanding for blowing a pick given the broken season, lack of consensus, minimal workouts? Or will fans expect more because teams have had so much longer to scout? Or will it be business as usual with executives praised for a great pick and the Knicks getting killed again for making their 857th terrible pick?" It's a great question. I'd like to know your takes. And I'd also be curious, do you feel like there are any particular organizations this year that are under significant pressure in this particular draft, whether because of where they're picking or just a need to get over the hump? Or is this kind of a write-off draft, which I think is how a lot of people have been treating it so far?
Yeah, I mean, to answer the question, first of all, I just don't think that pressure changes because of this being such a strange year. I mean, the NBA is a results-oriented business. People are going to expect you to not screw up your draft pick regardless. I mean, everybody has to deal with the same circumstances. It's very similar to competing in the bubble. That's what we said that entire time. And with regards to which teams are under the most pressure, I mean, it has to be, I think, Minnesota, to be honest with you. I think the Karl Anthony Towns situation, you want to talk about a superstar, or I should say, I don't want to call him a superstar, but a very, very, very good player who's getting paid a lot of money right now. Him being on the clock and potentially him wanting out of Minnesota, despite you trading valuable assets to get his good friend D'Angelo Russell aboard. I mean, this pick is huge for you. I don't think necessarily that, you know, you're going to form a big three with Towns, Russell, and whoever you take here. I think that rookie first overall pick could be a really interesting trade asset for you as you try to get better and better. But when I just look at Rosas and that front office, I feel like you can't screw up a first overall pick regardless of who is available, regardless of how your roster looks. It eats at you for years on down the road. So that's the team that I would say is the most pressure on them to hit this. You want to get the best player in the draft 3 years from now. You want to look back and be like, we took the right guy.
Well said. I think that in general, to answer Michael's question in Tasmania, I would say that there's going to be less attention on this year's draft because it doesn't come at a time of the sports calendar when it's sort of like the focus of the world, right? With football and college football going on right now, I think it's going to just get less attention. Without the guys being able to go to New York and have the whole ceremony, it's just going to be a worse feel. So I think, you know, there will be lowered expectations there. I also think that a lot of times fan bases get excited and have the expectations for the rookies because they want to go see him in person, right? It's like, let's go see the shiny new toy. That's why everybody runs out to Las Vegas Summer League, get a first glimpse at Lonzo Ball or Zion Williamson or whoever it might be. That aspect to this year's cycle won't be there either. So I do think it's going to be a little bit less pressure than usual. Now, if your team just drafts a lemon and it's obvious 3 months in, you're going to hear about it from your fan base, especially online. You know, there's no question there. But I think that it's just a more muted year this year with the NBA draft. Now, in terms of answering my question, which organizations face the most pressure, you identified my number one candidate. That would obviously be Minnesota. They're at the top of the list. I think in part because, you know, Gerson's still trying to make a name for himself, right? You know, he comes over from Houston. He spends all that time chasing Russell. He finally gets Russell. But now this is sort of like a defining pick. If you nail this pick, people will remember it, and it will buy you probably 5 years of goodwill. If you miss this pick, people are going to start looking the other direction and saying, come on, man, like, you traded a lot for Russell. You traded away next year's pick, right? You had the number one pick. You couldn't blow it. So how he handles this, whether he looks for trades, whether he just takes somebody, I think is going to be just a very defining moment for his career. So that's number one. The second team I would throw into this category facing pressure would be the Chicago Bulls. They have the fourth pick. They have a brand new front office. Similar reasoning here. Arturas, you know, he's coming in to a situation where Bulls fans have had like 15 years of pent up, built up angst and frustration about Gar Packs, and they haven't really had that big draft win at any point here over the last 5 years, right? There's a lot of guys who are interesting players, maybe slightly disappointing once they get on the court. They haven't really fit together. They're still waiting on Wendell Carter and those kinds of things.
No clear star.
Yeah. No clear star. And so here you have a top five pick, and it's, you know, not a great draft, but you could potentially get a LaMelo Ball in that range or someone else. So if you're Arturas, show us what your vision is, right? And show, you know, again, just a defining pick for him in terms of where their organization is going to go. It's the first piece he gets to build around as opposed to inheriting, right? And the third team I want to highlight would be the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think that they have been kind of left for dead after LeBron left, right? And you look at some of the players they've picked, whether it's Garland, Sexton, do those guys fit together? Do they make each other better? That's an open question to me. And I just think that, you know, that front office is going to start having some, you know, answering to do if they can't start showing some progress here, right? Some meaningful progress, because it's been a really rough watch these last couple of years. And again, they've got a top five pick. And so if you're ownership, you're saying, hey, come on, guys, like, no excuses here. Let's put this thing together. There's also just been some weird, like, going for Drummond. Like, what? You know, I didn't really understand what they're thinking there. So, you know, to me, it just feels like they are out there in the deep ocean water trying to keep their head above the surf and, you know, struggling a little bit and maybe half drowning with some of these decisions. And so this pick could be the life preserver they need, or it could be the ankle weight that drags them down further, right? So I think that, again, those three teams I'm especially watching on draft night, because I just think there's implications for their front offices in terms of how we view them, not only this year, but say the next 2 to 3 years going forward.
Yeah, I know. That's a really good point about Cleveland. I forgot that the Cavaliers existed personally.
Perfect. Well, wonderful. Now they are back in the NBA and ready to rock. Haven't played a game since March. Guess who's back? Back again. All right, Michael. I think that's enough for another episode of Open Floor. But guys, you can find us on Apple Podcasts by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. When you find our page, would you help us out? Rate and review. All you got to do is hit 5 stars. It's just that simple to help us spread the word. And leave a nice note. Say, Michael's doing a great job. We love the pod. He's been great. You know, give us a little bit of positive affirmation here after what's been a really wild week in the United States of America. Michael's on Twitter and Instagram at Michael V as in Victor Pina. I'm on Instagram at Ben.Golliver, on Twitter at Ben.Golliver. And do not forget, guys, email questions in. We've got a whole bunch more that we didn't get to today. We'll roll those over to next week. OpenFloorMail@gmail.com. OpenFloorMail@gmail.com. We want to hear your fake trades. We want to hear the players you want to see traded. We want to hear the front offices that you believe are facing the most pressure in this upcoming draft. Michael, until next week, when I imagine we may have an NBA labor deal to discuss and we may be on track to start that 2020-2021 season, I will talk to you.
And a new president. Talk soon, Ben.